Along with Ray Dinger, I'm Glenn Mack. Now, joining the show is Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger. Insider calls are presented by BetQL. Get access to data and insights the sportsbooks don't want you to see. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. Of course, you can also hear Brian with Jason Lockenfora on Baldy's Breakdowns. New episodes every week. Just search Baldy on the Odyssey app or wherever you find podcasts. Now, Ray, I watched Baldy's Breakdowns on Twitter over the last week, and Brian had a great one on what the Eagles did well in the game against Tampa, kind of trust the O-line and what they did not, which is throw short on the perimeter. Brian, I guess I'll just kind of ask you to start by assessing what you thought of the Eagles' offensive game plan in the 31-15 loss last week.
Ray started with a snicker, Ray.
Yep.
Yeah, good morning, Glenn, Ray. I wasn't very impressed. In fact, it doesn't happen often, but it did happen watching that game where I was screaming at my video screen about what they were trying to do. And I thought, what in the world, how did they even get to the playoffs and then abandon what got them there to go back to some of their old ways? And it just made little sense to me. And so I was biting my tongue when I was posting some of that stuff, because if I did it with the vitriol that I was watching it with, I probably would have shaken some feathers over there at Novacare.
Well, I think that you were probably seeing and reacting to the same things that I was when I was watching it, which is, you know, going into the game, you know that Todd Bowles is a cover three guy. You know how he's going to play. And you know what, you know where the soft spots are going to be. And one of them is built and sort of baked into the cover three is that comeback route on the outside is there anytime you want it. And in Devontae Smith, they have even though he's a rookie, he runs that pattern extremely well. And for them to have just ignored him until they're already down 17-0, to me was, I just couldn't understand what, you know, what Nick and the rest of the offensive coaching staff were thinking.
Well, that was part of it, Ray. Like, I mean, that was just sitting there. Jamel Dean was 10 yards off the ball, just trying to keep everything in front of him and just daring him to make that throw, and they wouldn't make it. And then I just thought, you know, what's the point of having Landon Dickerson and Jordan Mailata if you are afraid of running at Vita Vea and Ndamukong Suh? And they seemed like they were completely – they had total fear of it. But when they did do it, they had success with the few times that they did. So I just didn't understand that part where they just didn't want to just go mano a mano up front with those guys. They didn't run any inside zones right at them. And that was that. And then they went to the perimeter passing game, Ray, where they just got – butchered on the outside, because if your wide receivers aren't good blockers, those plays don't work. And so Carlton Davis and Jamel Dean and that group, Whitehead and Winfield, they had their way with it. And so that was part of it that bugged me as well.
You did you did one of your breakdowns talking about Todd Bowles' defense on a few plays, and there was one where you're looking at the Eagles' pass patterns and, well, Jalen Reagor could not get off the line of scrimmage, Baldy, and you made a point to that.
Well, I did, Glenn, but I wasn't necessarily, trying to just denigrate Jalen. All I was doing was, this is what Tampa thinks of him. Tampa is like, they'll double everybody else and zone everybody else, and they'll just put Jamel Dean on Jalen Reagor, and if he can't get off the line of scrimmage, he won't be a part of the play. And that's what Tampa thought of Jalen Reagor, not necessarily what I thought. People were like, oh, you're so critical of Jalen. Yeah, I'm not critical of him all. I'm just showing you what Tampa thinks of him.
Well,
Tampa
and it proved to be
about him.
Yeah, and it proved to be the case because he couldn't get off the line of scrimmage.
That's the point. And if you can't get off the line of scrimmage and if you can't beat man coverage, it's hard in this league, Glenn, to be a starting wide receiver. It just is. You're just not going to help your quarterback out at all. And that's pretty much what he's been for 2 years.
Yeah, it seems to me that when you look at the way they've tried to utilize him, I mean, they've kind of come to the same conclusion. I mean, you just don't see them almost asking him to do anything down the field. If they want to get the ball in his hands, which they clearly, going into every game, there's a package of Jalen plays that, you know, let's just get him the ball and see if he can do something happen. They're all smoke screens. They're all bubble screens. They're all jet sweeps. It's all stuff at the line of scrimmage because they know they can't get him off the line of scrimmage.
Well, he's just strictly a gadget player, you know, and so that's what they do. They call gadget type plays for him. You know, he just doesn't have – look, I mean, there's been plenty of receivers that are 5'9", 5'10", that have been great receivers in this league. He's not going to be one of them. I mean, he plays small, and he doesn't demand attention. And he doesn't – you know, I mean, he's got a long ways to go for me to think, Ray, that he can be a big part of the future of this team going forward, the way that he plays, the way that he presents himself. He doesn't stack corners. He doesn't get off the line of scrimmage cleanly. He doesn't run crisp routes to get separation to help your quarterback. And so all of them, he plays small. And that's what he has been so far.
It's funny, when he was coming out of TCU, I was not a fan. I had a fourth-round grade on him, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I was talking to another guy after the Eagles made the pick, and I'm saying, I can't believe they took this guy in the first round. And the other guy, who kind of liked him, was saying to me, well, you know, I said the same thing. I said, he's just small. And he said, well, you know, he's the same size as Steve Smith. And I said, oh, please. I mean, don't in a million years try to compare this guy to Steve Smith. I mean, they have no similarity whatsoever. I kind of agree with you. I just don't know. I mean, they've certainly given him every opportunity for 2 years because they made the investment in him. But I just don't know that he's ever going to be much more than he is right now.
I don't see it, Ray. I would never make any comparison to Steve Smith either. I mean, Steve Smith was a pit bull. You built your offense around a guy like that. But he was like that every day, Ray. I know Steve pretty well. I mean, he was like that every day in practice. I mean, he was like, and if you didn't want to practice hard, I mean, he went after you. You know, I mean, he was just an enforcer, you know, at that size. I mean, just a different, completely different mindset than what we've seen.
All right, let's get off the Eagles just for a moment. And Brian Baldinger is our guest. And, Brian, can we work in a gratuitous dig at what the Cowboys did at the end of the game last Saturday?
Well, you know, the Cowboys were playing basically at the speed of a regular season game, and the 49ers were playing at a postseason speed. And it was just completely different. And, you know, from the very first series of the game, when San Francisco went right down the field, they let the Cowboys know that this is what the postseason is all about. And Troy Aikman said it this week on a station in Dallas. He said, you know, if you can't get out of the first round of the playoffs, you're no different than the Jaguars or the Jets. You know, he was very hard, but you should be hard. That team's got a ton of talent. They don't play to it. And maybe it's just time that we kind of just recognize that maybe they're not that talented. You know, I mean, because the left guard got whipped, the left tackle is on his downside. You just go through what is Ezekiel Elliott at this point? Can Dak play big in a postseason game? I mean, you can just go through the list of guys that are supposed to be the core of that football team, and they all played small in that performance against San Francisco.
What do you think? I thought the 49ers, I really gave them a good chance in that game. I like the 49ers. I think they're a well-balanced team. They do a lot of things well. I think Shanahan's a good coach, good play caller. So I thought they had a chance to win down there. I really did. What do you think their chances are getting out of Lambeau?
Well, they have a formula, Ray, and it's really not that difficult. You know, they ran the ball 38 times last week against Dallas. They ran it in really a playoff game the week before against the Rams. They ran it 32 times. If you look at the stat sheet tonight at around 11:30 when that game finishes, if they have somewhere between 33 and 38 runs, they're either going to win the game or it's going to be a photo finish. That's part of it. And then in the last 2 weeks, they hit Dak Prescott 14 times last week, right? They dressed 9 defensive linemen. They all hit Dak Prescott. The week before, they hit Matt Stafford and sacked him 5 times. They hit him 13 times.
Wow.
I mean, they're getting to the quarterback with their front four. They don't have to blitz to do it. I mean, Charles DeMahieu and, you know, Kevin Givens and, you know, a bunch of guys up front, Arden Key, not named Nick Bosa, to the quarterback. And so they're turning those dogs loose up front, and they're doing their job.
All right, Brian Baldinger, we got a minute or two left. I just want to get your quick kind of thoughts of the games coming up. You mentioned Packers, Green Bay. What do you see? Bengals, Titans, say Titans a one seed, but not getting a lot of respect.
I don't know why. I mean, in 4 successive weeks this year, beat Buffalo, Kansas City, Indianapolis, and the Los Angeles Rams. And they beat them up front with their defensive front. I think that Cincinnati is, much as everybody admires what Joe Burrow is doing and has done and what Ja'Marr Chase is, that might all crumble against this front from Tennessee this week. And I haven't even mentioned getting Derrick Henry back. But even without Derrick Henry, they still ran the ball really, really well. And so it's the way that they run it. It's the guys up front that are healthy right now. I think this is a tough assignment for Cincinnati today.
And your pick on Niners-Packers?
It's hard to go against Aaron Rodgers, up there at Green Bay this week. But I like how the 49ers are playing. So I want to see if Jimmy G can make five throws the way we saw Nick Foles once make five unbelievable throws in a Super Bowl game. Because if they can make those throws, they'll have a chance.
There you go. Brian Baldinger, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us, man.
Yep.
Thanks, Brian.
All the best. Yep. Take care, guys.
Thank you.
Be well. That was Brian Baldinger, Odyssey Insider. Insider calls presented by BetQL. BetQL is here to help us all make better bets through real proven analytics. BetQL and beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com.
I've really enjoyed – I can't tell you how much I enjoyed the years I worked with him at NFL Films.
You talked about kind of getting to the film room and early and breaking it down with him. And I think you said the same thing about Westbrook. Those are the two guys I know that you have mentioned how much you like kind of breaking down stuff with them.
Yeah, we did a show called Eagles Under Review that was every Monday after an Eagles game. And B. West and Baldy and I would meet at Baldy's office in NFL Films at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
6 a.m.
Yeah,
we would get
good.
There, and Baldy would just, put the tape on, and we would just go through it play by play. And, boy, they are good. I mean, I thought I knew a lot going into it, but, boy, I got an education with those guys.
Just to be a fly on the wall in that room with the three of you would be pretty special. Let's get Chris in Exton here. He wants to talk about the Eagles draft. Hello, Chris.
Hey, guys, how are you? I love Saturday mornings with you guys.
Thank you, Chris.
I'm going to give you, again, all opinion, obviously, my three kind of points about the upcoming Eagles draft. The first is people talk about defense. I agree with you completely. We need to concentrate on defense. But people talk about positionally picking players. I would pick the absolute best available defensive player. We have so many holes. With two or three defensive selections, pick the best absolute player and forget about position. Because we don't have players like that on our team. We want playmakers on our team. And then second...
Well, hold on. Let's react to that, Ray.
I
have nothing I can argue with that statement.
No, I can't either. I mean, they could use help at every level. We all know they need linebackers. There's no mystery there. They desperately need an edge rusher. They can get pressure on the quarterback. And you got three 30-year-old guys starting in the secondary. You need to get younger back there, too. I agree with you.
Yeah, I just get worried how he kind of goes after position and just pick the darn best player you can pick and see what happens. Secondly, we have five picks in the first, 80 players or so. And my opinion is I don't think, again, Hurts is going to be that long-term person. I saw some quarterbacks this weekend who are much better than him who I don't think are going to be long-term players. I mean, long-term Super Bowl quarterbacks like Dak Prescott. I don't think he's ever going to make it. And I just think we need to pick up. If there's a quarterback available, take a flyer on a draft pick and see what happens. Don't spend money.
To me, you're almost contradicting yourself because here's I agree with you. If Joe Burrow is in this draft, I'm going for it. If that great young player is at the top of this draft, a quarterback, I'm taking those three first rounders and moving up. But it doesn't appear. And Ray, if you disagree, let me know that the guy's there. So you're going to take another guy who may be about as good as Jalen Hurts, but not special. So
that's not what I'm saying.
I'm sorry.
Take one of the five picks and pick a player, taking a flyer on a quarterback. Not all five. Take one.
I don't think I would do that because I don't think that quarterback of that level is out there currently.
But you never know.
Well, then.
If these quarterbacks who look. Brady made it. You never know.
So you're taking a shot.
Know.
That's fine. But you're really just throwing a dart in the dark. We got to run, but give us the movie.
How about Vision Quest? My favorite movie.
Oh, that's a good, wrestling, rare wrestling movie. I like it. And Ray, we put that in our book.
We did.
Not that high, but still a very good little movie.
Yeah, it was, I think it might have been Matthew Modine's first, well, it was certainly kind of his breakout role.
Breakout role,
yeah. He was really good.
Yeah, that is a good movie. I like that movie. And I'll just have you comment on what he said. take a flyer on a quarterback. Well, I mean, somewhere he said in those first five picks. So in the first three rounds, draft a quarterback. I don't think they'll do it in the first round.
No.
So
I wouldn't. Mean, I think that would be a mistake. I think that. Well, you and I have talked about this. I think Kenny Pickett from Pitt is in my view, he's the best of this group. But the grade I have on him right now is low first round. But I know he's going to go higher than that. And you're probably going to wind up with, even though I think this is not a great year for quarterbacks, you're probably going to have four, maybe even five of them taken in the first round just because that's what happens. But, you know, to use one of those guys and at the expense of a higher-rated defensive player, I wouldn't do that. I really wouldn't do that. You know, Pickett, I keep hearing, and to me this makes sense, I keep hearing him to the Steelers, which kind of makes sense. I mean, sure. He's right there in Pittsburgh.
Oh,
I think
they'd love that.
I think he's the best. I honestly think he's the best quarterback out of this bunch. And given the way they run their offense, he's a pocket passer. You know, we know that Big Ben's moving on. To me, the idea of Pickett staying home and playing for the Steelers as the number one pick makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I hear that. This hour is sponsored by Meridian Bank, one of the area's best business banks. Learn why at meridianbanker.com/WIP. 215-592-9494. Good conversation today. We've talked a lot about, of course, the Eagles and the NFL. Ray and I are going to preview today's games coming up in the next segment. We have had some interesting Sixers talk and a couple angry Flyers fans. And Flyers fans should be angry and disgusted, which precedes getting disinterested. And when that happens, well, then it's a whole new ballgame. Taking your calls coming up. Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack now on 94 WIP. Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack now 94 WIP. Ray, let's take a call or two, and then we'll tee up our thoughts on the games going on today. I know your plan after this is head home, and let me guess. Put on the old sweat. Man, you don't own sweatpants. You're gonna keep on the khakis.
Mm-hmm.
But sit down with about four or five notebooks, yellow mm-hmm. legal pads,
right?
Remote in hand, mm-hmm. and a dog by your side,
mm-hmm.
A couple large Pepsis to get you through the day.
Right. I'm actually a Diet Coke guy, but that's
Diet okay. Coke. Excuse me. Wife in the other room doing something.
Right.
And
ignoring me.
Right. Exactly. Pretty much a well-spent day and evening.
Yeah, I can't. sounds like a slice of heaven to me. I really am so looking forward to this because you said my favorite weekend, and it is.
Yeah.
You know, these four games, you're down to the final eight, you're down to the best teams, and I think these are all really evenly matched games that I am really, really looking forward to them.
Well, we're going to discuss the first two in just a moment, but let's talk to John and Manny Young first. You're on with Ray and Glenn. What's up, John?
Hey, guys, I got a quick show for you to watch if you want to hear about it.
Sure.
I know no one really watches network TV anymore, but there's a pretty clever show on TBS called Ghost. I think your wives might like it. It's pretty
Yeah,
good.
You know, it's funny. So, Ray, as you know, I mostly watch, like, really pretty intense crime shows, right?
Right.
And last week I reviewed this thing I'm watching called Yellow Jackets, which is, you know, about a teenage soccer team gets in a plane crash and they get stuck in the remote for 19 months. And it's tough. And my wife's hanging in there. But she wants like a relief show. Like, give me something that's just like a half hour kind of funny, silly. And I've heard the show you just mentioned, I've heard good things about. So I will check that out.
Yeah, yeah. And I know the thing I want to talk about real quick before I get to my movie is it's about a week till February. I haven't heard one person talking about baseball, and you don't know who's playing left field, center field, third base, shortstop. And if the Major League Baseball goes on strike, I think they're making a grave mistake for sports in the long run, because people are just going to – they're already starting to forget about the sport. I don't know what you guys think.
I agree. I wish I could be optimistic, but, you know, I think you have an utterly inept commissioner, which doesn't make him unique among commissioners, but I think Rob Manfred. I think baseball has really come to a crossroads, and unfortunately, this would be a time if they had a really good commissioner could kind of see his way through this. But I have no confidence in him being able to do that. And the fact is, it doesn't seem like to me the two sides seem very inclined to even talk right now. So yeah, right now we'd normally be in the point of saying counting down the days to pitchers and catchers reporting, and it ain't there.
Yeah. I mean, it'll probably be a month from now the pitchers will be there. So.
Yeah.
But give us my movie. I'm gonna go ahead, yep.
No, I was going to say, give us a movie that a great coming of age movie.
Going old school, I think it's kind of coming of age, The Graduate.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now he's gonna and it's one. Listen, that's one of the great movies ever made. I think John's gonna have a tough time because Ray, you and producer Dan Wilson are the judges today,
right?
And Ray, I'll bet you a dollar to a dime that Dan Wilson has never seen The Graduate.
Oh, you may be underrated.
You'd win that bet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I take it back. I thought that The Graduate was such a touchstone picture. I thought that, you know, even guys of Dan's generation had probably seen it somewhere along the line.
Here's what I've learned, Ray, as a huge movie fan and TV buff and so on. And I don't say this in any way to be disparaging against Dan, because Dan's a sharp guy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, I hate to say this generation, because I love, you don't hear me rip millennials, you don't hear me rip Gen Xers, you don't hear me rip those people. I think it's a great generation, and they work hard, and there's a lot of things that are going against them.
Are you going to tell me to get off the lawn next?
No, I'm going the opposite way. This is my whole point. My whole point is I really strive not to be that way because, listen, I have two sons your age, and I know them and their friends and other people. I think your generation is doing the best it can under tough circumstances. But this is one thing I have learned about a lot of this generation. They don't watch anything that was made before their time. They don't go back and watch old movies, which is ironic because they're more available than ever, right? If you wanted to watch The Graduate, you could find it within 2 minutes somewhere streaming. But people don't watch stuff that was created before their lifetime, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, I would say that. Although I'll tell you this, you're probably going to be disappointed in me for saying this, Glenn. Mm. I saw The Graduate again. I just stumbled upon it one night on TV.
Yeah.
Like a year ago.
Yeah.
And so, The Graduate.
That's
I watch
great.
It again. It didn't age well.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
That happens sometimes. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, it's still good, but it was when I look back on it, it's very of its time.
The pace is slow.
It's very of its time. Yeah, yeah it is. Yeah. And this isn't a comment. This isn't a comment on Simon and Garfunkel and all that stuff. Maybe a little bit.
Dustin Hoffman.
But it just doesn't age well. The cinematography, the way it's shot, it's very 60s. But I mean that surprised me. I thought that was a movie that was really going to hold its impact, and I really loved it when I first saw it in the 60s. I like everybody else of that generation. Well, 68, it came out in 68. That's when I graduated from college. So I mean the movie really spoke to me. But when I saw it a year ago, I was a little bit surprised. It didn't age all that well.
Didn't you have the hots for Catherine Ross? Am I remembering that correctly?
No, not really.
Oh, okay. Who was that? Somebody we know had the hots for Catherine Ross.
I remember somebody.
Like an all-time,
yes.
Crush and
yes.
Back in the day.
Well, she was, she's been married to Sam Elliott for like 40 years now.
Is that right?
Yeah, they're a couple.
Does he use that voice at home?
And have been forever. I don't know where they were. Maybe they met, was Sam Elliott and Butch Cassidy? Maybe he was. Somewhere along the line, they made a movie together, and they fell in love, and they got married, and have been married for like 40 years. They're one of Hollywood's longest married couples.
He's got the greatest voice ever.
Oh, he does. He does.
Okay. All right. Enough about that. Let's talk about football, Ray. Today, two big games. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it doesn't start till 4:30, right? You got all day to kill.
I know.
All right.
And I'm looking forward to that.
4:30 on CBS. Bengals travel to Tennessee to play the Titans. Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, the LSU guys. Ooh, there you go. And we talked about it. Tennessee doesn't get the respect you would expect a lot of one seeds to get. Derrick Henry coming back from injury today. And, of course, Joe Burrow been on such a great, great streak toward the end of the year. How do you look at this? Let me just set this up for some. I'm sorry. Titans 3.5-point favorite at home.
Yeah, and you said Joe Burrow. He's great and totally legit. I mean, anybody that saw him play his final year at LSU might have been one of the greatest. It might be the greatest season that any college quarterback has ever had. I mean, he was just magnificent. You kind of knew that he was going to come into the NFL and do great things, and he has. He goes to Cincinnati and really changes the culture there in a very short order. Last week, they win their first playoff game in 30 years. hard to believe. But they won that one at home, and they had the home field advantage. Different story now. They got to go on the road. They got to go down and play the number one seed, Tennessee, who, you're right, I mean, have not gotten very much respect. I mean, they're a number one seed, and hardly anybody's talking about them. People are talking about the Chiefs-Bills game as if that's the AFC championship, you know. And they're kind of forgetting about the team that's the number one seed, Tennessee, who is a pretty good team. And, you know, Baldy said it. He put his finger right on exactly what I think, is the Titans are really, really good, really good up front. They're front four. Even though they don't have any superstars, they don't have any big names up there, they're big, they're tough, they are physical, and they are relentless. This year, they got 35 sacks and 153 pressures just with the front four.
Wow.
They only blitz about...
A little
about,
different than the Eagles stats there, right?
Yeah, I mean, they only blitz like 18% of the time, which is low by NFL standards now. But they don't have to because they'll get there with the four. And this, to me, is the weakness of the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals have terrific playmakers, great still position guys. You know, that we know, we've talked, you know, everybody has seen what Chase has done as a rookie. You know, they have Joe Mixon as a running back. They have T. Higgins. They have Tyler Boyd. They have great skill position players, very explosive. But tackle to tackle, they're weak. And you saw this year, even though Burrow is not a guy that holds the ball that long, he still took 51 sacks. So going up against this Tennessee front, I just don't know if they're going to be able to keep them off of Burrow long enough for him to exploit the to make the plays to his playmaker. So, you know, Cincinnati is a terrific young team. They've taken a big step this year by winning a playoff game. I still think they need to improve that offensive line to become a true contender. I think Tennessee wins and moves on.
Ooh, you know, I kind of agree. And I think Burrow has the opportunity to be a dominant quarterback in the league for years, but maybe, just not maybe, today on the road. We'll see. I'll give you an over-under on Derrick Henry carries at 13.5.
Oh, okay. I
made that number up, by the way. That's not
okay. I would probably go over. I don't think he's going to carry it 30 times. He probably shouldn't. But I think he'll do more than 13. I think he'll be, you know, 17, 18, somewhere in there.
All right. By the way, most of the public, 65% of the public, betting on Tennessee on that game.
Right.
So kind of see it the way I do. All right. Tonight, 8:15 on Fox. 49ers, who, boy, Baldy praised the 49ers very effusively. Travel to Lambeau Field. You know what? I don't know what the temp's there. Here's my guess. Cold.
Yes.
to play the Packers. And the Packers, 5.5-point favorites as of now.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting stat that Aaron Rodgers has never beaten San Francisco in the postseason. He's 0-3 against the 49ers in the postseason. He has a winning record against them in the regular season, winless against them in the postseason. But the other thing is, the other part of it is that he's just about unbeatable at Lambeau Field. The Packers were the only team this year in the NFL that did not lose a home game. And I think their winning streak now at Lambeau is something like 14 or 15 in a row going back to last year. They're very tough to beat there. It doesn't matter if it's early in the season or late in the season, but you get into January and beating them up there is a whole different animal. And I mentioned that Jimmy Garoppolo, I read a story this week, that surprised me, and I'm assuming it's true, is that Garoppolo has never started a game where the temperature is lower than 40 degrees.
I saw that. Not just that he never won a game, but he's never started. How is that possible?
I know. When I read that, I thought, that doesn't seem right, but I'm assuming that it is, that he has never. So obviously the conditions that he faces up in Lambeau tonight will be unlike anything that he's ever played in his life. And he's going into it with torn ligaments and the thumb on his passing hand. Does not seem like a formula for success to me. But the one thing about the 49ers is they're good. They're talented. They're very balanced. They can run the ball. Elijah Mitchell is back, and he's going to carry the ball a ton. And Kyle Shanahan has done really wonderful things with Deebo Samuel. I mean, here's a guy that's a wide receiver, basically.
Yeah. Love that.
But he lines him up in the backfield a lot.
Yeah.
He's always got guys in motion. He's always shifting formations. He's a real bear to play against because he gives you a lot to think about, and he has playmakers who can really make plays. They have a good offensive line, and their defense is going to be whole now. They're going to be getting some injured guys back. They're going to be getting Bosa will be coming back. Fred Warner, who sprained his ankle last week, he'll be back. So the 49ers are going to have their whole defense there, but you just see the kind of year that Aaron Rodgers has been on and the role that he's been on. I don't see that changing. I think this is going to be a really good game. I think the 49ers are going to hang with them and make some plays. But when it's all said and done, I think the Packers are going to win this game and keep on moving. So I'm going with the two number one seeds. I'm going with the chalk today. I think that both Tennessee and Green Bay come out of this with wins.
So last week we had all those blowouts, right? I mean, some of the games were good, and as a Bills fan, I loved seeing a little bit of revenge over all those after all those years with the Patriots and Belichick. But there's too many teams in the playoffs. We really don't need the seventh team, and we saw that last week.
Yeah,
I think there's going to be one blowout this week, and I think that's it. I think the Niners will get blown out by the Packers. Other games will be close. I think Tennessee Bengals is kind of a pick 'em, but I think this game has the big chance to be double digit.
Yeah, it kind of does. And you know, the one area that, you know, you look at the stats, if you just go by the stats, it doesn't always play out that way, but the one area where San Francisco can hang in, and they absolutely have to do this, is be really good in the red zone. When they get inside the 20, they got to score, and they've been really good at it. They're either the number one red zone offense this year. When they've been inside the 20, they've been scoring touchdowns, and that's one area where Green Bay is weak. Green Bay's red zone defense, they're 28th. So teams score on them down in that part of the field. So if San Francisco's going to hang in there and make sure this isn't a blowout, is every time they get that ball inside the 20, they can't be kicking field goals. They got to be scoring touchdowns. And that's one thing they've been very good at this season.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's grab a call here. Craig in South Philly joins us. Hello, Craig.
Hi. First of all, I think you guys are great. I've listened to you for many years. I'm 65. I'm a longtime Philly fan. It is not easy being a Philly fan. You know, you talk about the Phillies, and we had season tickets with my late father and the Eagles also. Wins and losses, it's not a pretty picture.
I understand.
I'm waiting for an Eagle to land in Ray's backyard again so the Eagles will go back to the Super Bowl, which is unbelievable. And that's really what I call about. I think you're both great, but Ray, I just loved your book. I just thought it was delightful. And what sport's about, especially in Philly, is not just winning and losing. It's about the humanity, the stuff you wrote about Andy Reid reaching out to you, the stuff you wrote about some of the owners and their issues. They're just great stories, and I just loved your book. And
Thank you.
I lived it.
Thank you.
Craig,
I appreciate that. Thank you.
The other thing I want to say, you know, in terms of great films, I love the movie Field of Dreams, but a lot of people don't realize that the original source is a book called Shoeless Joe.
Yeah.
And they changed it for the movie, I think, because of legal issues. The character in the book.
You know why they changed it for the movie? Because we write about it in our book. They changed it for the movie because when they tested the idea of a movie called Shoeless Joe, people thought it didn't associate with the baseball player and thought it was about like a guy who was poor and stuff.
No, that's part of it. But in the original book, it's not this fictional character played brilliantly by James Earl Jones. It's J.D. Salinger.
Right.
And J.D. Salinger was a real recluse, had all kinds of issues. But I think they're both great.
I'm sorry, I thought you said the way they changed it, the reason they changed the name of the book. By the way, Ray, your book is terrific. It really is.
Thank you.
It's phenomenal. I had the opportunity to read it really before it came out. You and I basically got 6 months of programming.
Yes, we did.
Off of taking a chapter a week and just kind of doing it on the air during the pandemic. But if people want a copy of Finished Business and want to get it signed, say, over the next week or so, what could they do?
And it makes a tremendous Valentine's Day gift, I would add.
There you go. Good plug, right? How would they get that?
Yeah, well, I'm just here to help. If you want to come out, Glenn's having a charity event for a very good cause to raise money for a friend of his that was in a bicycle accident and really needs to raise some money. So we're having a big event this coming Thursday at Puddler's Pub on DeKalb in
Puddler's Kitchen and Tap, 3 DeKalb. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yep. No, that's
spot.
Okay.
3 DeKalb, Puddler's Kitchen and Tap, one of the Conchie Brewing places, 3 DeKalb Street in Bridgeport, right over the bridge from Norristown. Who else is going to be there, Ray?
Well, Bernie Parent will be there, the great Flyers Hall of Fame goalie, and I will be there signing copies of my book, Finished Business, and Mike Sielski of the Inquirer will be there, and he will be signing copies of his brand new book, The Rise, The Story of Kobe Bryant.
There you go.
It's going to be a real fun night. And you have $15, just get in the door, and you have a free buffet, and you can hang out all night and buy a book, and it'll be a great evening, and you'll be doing a good deed in the process.
There you go. Thank you. Thursday night, this coming Thursday, 6 to 9, lots of great auction items. The Eagles, the Phillies, people really come through for us, and just lots of fun and good beer. And a lot of the profits go to help the family of a longtime friend of mine who was paralyzed in this bike crash. Nicely done. We will come back, sneak in a few more calls before we hand it off to Rob is it Rob Elisay or is it Go Birds Radio?
No, it's Go Birds.
Go Birds Radio coming up at 1. Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack now on 94 WIP. Ray Dinger, sorry, Ray. I do know your name. Glenn Mack now. We will also, by the way, be back tomorrow at 10 o'clock for more of this frivolity. The aforementioned Mike Sielski will join us tomorrow. Special guest Mike Dad will join us tomorrow as well. And I'm going to tell him, you're going to tell him that he's got to wear the same clothes as he wore last week.
And order the same food from the same place. Sit in the same chair.
Sankey. Yeah, well, that's his chair when he comes here, so that's fine.
Don't do anything different. Don't do anything different.
All right. You're going to tell my wife that lasagna that she's been planning, like, she can't make that?
Monday.
Okay. All right.
Monday.
You know what's
Sunday.
Be cool?
Sunday. You got to stick with the formula.
Okay. You know what's going to be very special tomorrow? So my dad's going to be here, and I'm, of course, my wife and I are going to be here, and my son Alex is coming over with the 20-month-old baby Gregory.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have four generations under the roof, which is pretty nice. It's very, I know how special that is.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Are you raising Gregory as a Bills fan here? Or
he's
an Eagles fan.
No, he's an Eagles fan. Okay. I mean, you know, if my dad wants, I'm a Bills fan because I grew up in Buffalo and obviously because I want my dad to have that. But Gregory's never grew up in Buffalo. He doesn't have ties there. So, you know, he's going to be a Birds fan.
I just know one thing. Nobody in that family is going to be a Cowboys fan.
No. John, if I said that clearly enough. Hello, John. How are you, my friend?
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and happy belated New Year to you. This is my first call of the New Year.
Nice
it's
to hear from you.
It's been a while since I spoke to you both.
Ray, John Tronsolidi, the greatest barber in Western civilization.
Ah, nice to hear from you, John.
Great talking to you guys about the Eagles and some of the draft history that has taken place over the last few years. Let's go back to 2014. The Eagles had the 22nd pick in the draft, and right before they were targeting Clinton Dix, a nice safety who ended up going to Green Bay right before. If the Eagles had been a little more aggressive, they could have had him by trading up a little bit more, but instead they ended up trading that 22nd pick to Cleveland, and then they drafted at the 26th position, ended up getting Marcus Smith. Truly a first-round
pick.
Yeah,
that didn't work out too well.
And then
glad you brought that one up.
Then, okay, and let's fast forward to 2020. So the Eagles had they selected Jalen Reagor, but if they had been a little more aggressive and picked before Dallas at 17, they could have had CD Lamb instead of Reagor. And
Yeah, much discussed and debated at the time.
Yeah, and the thing is they didn't have to move. All they had to do was stay in their spot and take Justin Jefferson.
Yeah.
And they still would
have had
a dynamic receiver.
We have to run. Do you have an all-time best coming-of-age movie?
Well, I just came back 24 hours ago. I was there. The Heartbreak Kid. It was was a romantic comedy that was filmed down in Cabo. And we just came back for my wife's birthday, another thing.
Ray, you notice how he dropped that in there?
I did notice that.
I just got back from Cabo, and
yeah, it was tough coming back, leaving that 82-degree weather that we had on average during the day, and coming back to climate shock here.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, John, always a pleasure. Be well, my friend. They remade that movie, right?
Yes,
and it was terrible the second time around. Right? I mean, that's my recollection.
Yeah, I didn't see the second version of it. The one I remember is the Charles Grodin one.
Yes, yes. With female lead?
Was it Sybil Shepherd?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
You have a thing for her?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Well, I'm not asking today.
No, yeah, I mean, when I went to see Last Picture Show, I thought I thought she was just luminous on the screen.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Although she didn't look like a girl that would be living in a dusty old Texas town. I mean, that was she just seemed out of context in that setting. I thought.
Well, wasn't her whole goal was to get out of there?
And, well, I know, but I mean, she just didn't look. I mean, she looked like she just walked off Rodeo Drive into Texasville, and it just seemed a little odd to me. Okay. But Peter Bogdanovich was crazy about her, and I'll tell you one thing. I don't think I've ever seen a director shoot a woman as beautifully as he shot her. I mean,
well,
every shot of her, she just seemed to glow.
Yeah, well, he married her.
Well, yeah, no kidding.
Well,
I don't think they ever got married. I don't think they ever got married. But they were a couple for a long time.
For a long time. Okay, if you're on hold, stick around. I'm sorry we're not going to get to you, but the Go Birds radio guys will get to you, James Seltzer and Elliot Shore Parks.
They're right outside the door.
When I was talking about people who don't watch movies before they were born, Elliot Shore Parks is among that group. And very, very proud of that.
Doesn't surprise me.
No. Elliot, it was made in 1979. I'm not watching that. Yeah, but it's The Godfather. Well, it was earlier, 1972, 1973. Why would I watch that? Okay. So we have to pick, Ray, the greatest coming-of-age movie ever made, and this is because I watched a couple movies recently, Coda, which I love. I'm telling people watch that movie on Apple TV+. And why am I forgetting the name of it? J.D. Moringer.
Yeah, Tender Bar.
So thank you. Tender Bar, which I just recently watched on Amazon Prime. Ray, you could watch that in the theater. It's pretty good. So here's what we heard from our listeners today, and you and Dan Wilson are going to pick this, and hopefully I don't have to break a tie.
Mm-hmm.
And we got good ones, man. Breaking Away, mm-hmm. Stand By Me, mm-hmm. Bronx Tale. I probably didn't write them all down. Breakfast Club, Outside Providence. You didn't see that, so that's not going to win. Vision Quest, Heartbreak Kid, and
Graduate. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Dan and I actually came to the same conclusion.
Oh,
so
wow.
So you won't have to break the tie. Dan, why don't you tell Glenn what we decided on?
Yeah, the winner is going to be Harvey with Bronx Tale. And
all right.
Yeah, I think that's the one. Ray, independently of I, we both have said the same thing.
Great. Well, it is a great movie and is a great coming-of-age story. And yeah, the one-man show that he did for a couple of years is absolutely outstanding. All right, Ray Dinger. So we will be back tomorrow. Just one more time, I'm going to say big charity event Thursday night at the Conshohocken Brewing Company, Puddler's Tap and Kitchen, 3 DeKalb Street in Bridgeport, right over the bridge from Norristown. Ray will be signing copies of his book, and as will Mike Sielski. Bernie Perrant will be there. We got some terrific auction items, some giveaways. $15 gets you in the door, and then you get a free buffet and good beer and all that stuff. Tonight on NBC Sports Philadelphia, if you get a chance, watch What's Brewing with Joe Sixpack, me, and our special guest, Kate Scott. And Ray, I know you're going to spend your day productively watching football, which we'll talk about tomorrow.
And we will talk about it tomorrow.
All right, Dan Wilson, great job by you. Let me just say one more time, today's show was brought to you by Meridian Bank, one of the area's best business banks. Learn why at meridianbanker.com/WIP. Stay tuned for Go Birds Radio. Ray and I will see you tomorrow. Dan, thank you so much. We'll talk to you then.